We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into your Friday episode, Friday, May 26th. We appreciate you being here. This is the OBR Film Breakdown, hosted by Jake Burns. I'm joined by Andrew Spade. If you missed Wednesday's podcast, we started our little, I guess it's called an investigation here into positional value and team building as we look at kind of the priority by which teams in the AFC North are building their organization. So we're looking position by position. For the most part, we are looking at some of the stuff here for defense and offensive line. I'm going to kind of group them together where we do a little bit of a breakdown in between, but we're kind of grouping those together. So if you missed Wednesday, we did the offensive side of the football. And today we're going to do defense, and we'll probably just throw in a little bit of special teams just to see how invested these teams are into figuring out special teams.
Might as well, right?
Before we get started, though, Andrew, I know there was one piece of discussion that you wanted to go over before, and I should ask you the obligatory podcast question. What's up? How are you?
Not bad, Jake. Getting pretty good at just always being not bad or pretty good right when the podcast starts, which is really convenient because every time I can just be like, yep, pretty good.
It's a skill. It's a skill. We should also tell people we're recording this also on Tuesday. So we're jumping ahead because Andrew has some stuff to take care of over the next week. We wanted to get something recorded here for this topic because I think it's pretty good to go through both of these things kind of while your mind is on it. So if we missed anything, I'm sure I'll cover it on the Thursday or Saturday show. And if it happened Friday morning or Friday, late Thursday night, whatever, then I'm sorry about that, but we'll cover it at some point, but just want to make that clear.
Yeah, that's a good caveat for when the Browns trade for DeForest Buckner on Friday afternoon.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. We were talking in the first half of this recording about the OBR doing a retrospective. Barry McBride is writing up a retrospective of, you know, all the stuff that the OBR has done over the years, the different incarnations. And you were mentioning, you know, the grassroots movement to keep the Browns name and colors in Cleveland when the team, Art Modell, stole the team away to Baltimore in 1996. And it kind of got me thinking while we were recording, just like, what would that look like in today's society? You know, because it wasn't that long ago, but it certainly was before the internet was much of anything, you know, and obviously part of that documentary about, you know, the effort to save the Browns was about like an early message board and things like that. But in the age of social media and, you know, the sort of instant reaction culture that we live in at this point, do you think that makes it harder or easier for Modell to get away with that? Because I think in one sense, it's harder because there's so much, like everybody's voice can be heard instantaneously. But, you know, from another level, it does feel like we're kind of at a point now as a society where we just kind of move on from thing to thing.
Yeah.
And no one thing really, like, you know, dominates the headlines for days. I mean, I'm sure I don't have, you know, the Plain Dealers archive in front of me, but I'm sure that when the Browns announced they were moving, when Modell announced that, it was probably front page news for a week, right? And it just kind of dominates the conversation in a way that it doesn't feel like, you know, I don't want to get too far off topic, but it doesn't feel like that happens for us anymore. So I just wondered if you had a thought. I mean, we haven't really seen a franchise move. I don't think maybe an NBA franchise move, but
well, the Rams are the last NFL team. Vegas took the Raiders.
Right. Boy, I'm way off base here. We have seen two franchises move. Thanks, Jake. Jeez.
Yeah, but both of those teams had already moved, right? Yeah, so the Raiders had gone to LA as well. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
So those teams weren't uprooted from like again, this would be like Green Bay getting moved. I mean, these are the core franchises at the beginning of this whole operation of the mm-hmm. NFL. So yeah, I think your point is interesting and one that I just think there's such a lack of accountability in the world these days that and people in Cleveland had nothing else to talk about. Now there were obviously things going on the other two main sports, but you're so fixated on it. I could see it going both directions. I could see social media campaigns and people going crazy, but I also feel like in today's world that there's a whole bunch of, I'll just get away with whatever I want to get away with. And it feels like the lack of like accountability on some of that stuff and the propensity of people to move on to the next thing to feel upset about. I don't really go into politics at all on this show, but I understand a lot of perspectives, but I can also admit that our world gets a little too offended a little too quickly. So they seem to move on from thing to thing pretty quickly. So maybe it would fizzle out and people would just be like, well, what, this is a new opportunity to name the organization, right? Or something. It feels like they took the Browns at a time where they had just made those late 80s runs and the 90s team went to the playoffs with Belichick and they were on the up and up. And maybe if we had spent 20 years doing what we've been doing right now, because I think if you move the Browns right now, the same thing repeated itself, but it happened now instead of 1995 or whenever the official time that happened, I think people would be encouraged to move on from the name because of the 23-24 years.
That's a great point.
Terrible linkage to the organization. It was not. There was not that stink back then. There was not. Mm-hmm.
You're right.
Wasn't even anywhere near close. So
you're right.
If we move that forward to today, I do think that there would be an interesting, especially now that we have seen the Indians move to the Guardians and we're a little bit more, mm-hmm. I don't know if open is the right word. We're just more accepting of this as something that can happen to break tradition. And I think there would be a humongous faction of people who would want to keep it the Browns, but I think there'd be a little bit more openness to changing it because of the negative connotation that has come with 23, 24 years of suffering here. So yeah, good question. I don't totally know how that would go, but I think that I lean that there would be a more openness to that now than there was back then, when you're right, people picked up the sports page every day for months and months, and it was led by, you know, figuring out who broke whose heart and, you know, the evil Modell and how can we still stick a fork in him and, you know, keep something of this team and, you know, cause there was no hope that they were coming back then. There was none. We know now, right? We know now that there was you know, what the result is, but back then it was like, these guys are gone forever and we just want to keep them from taking the name. And then, you know, when they figured out they could get another team, that went all well and dandy and they were able to refresh it all. But yeah, it's such a weird time. And that's what's one of the things, obviously I was alive, you were alive, but I don't think we were old enough to remember it.
No,
the way
it
went. That's why reading Barry's perspective, watching the video that we're referencing is interesting, because it's just like there are certain things like I wish I was born 10 years earlier. I really mm-hmm. do, because I mm-hmm. think I would have enjoyed those. What little period of time pre-internet I received, the dial-up era and really, like, I have flashes of that stuff, but I don't really, you know, you didn't live it. Like,
right.
You didn't live it. And that's stuff that I would have liked to have lived through. So,
I think your point about the Rams is probably the most relevant comparison, because, you know, what the XFL this year, the St. Louis team had, I think, by far the best attendance of any team in the league, and the fans went crazy for it. And so it's obvious that town shouldn't really have had its franchise taken away, that was, you know, truly a case of somebody buying the team, seeing a business opportunity to go to a different city and make more money. And just doing it because they wanted to make more money, which is the closest analog to, you know, what Modell was doing with the Browns, just trying to, you know, get out of the debt that he had incurred over the years. So, you know, I think it's, I wasn't super dialed into what was happening with the Rams, but it does seem like it happened pretty much without a hitch, you know. And I know obviously they had moved to St. Louis from LA, so it's like, you know, a little bit of a, you know, it's a little bit different, but at the same time, you had an engaged fan base and a decent stadium. And it's so to see it disappear like that, you know, I do think, you know, I kind of would come down on the side of, you know, there would be some gnashing of teeth. There'd be a lot of negative press, but you know, I don't even know where they would go, but you know, the Birmingham Browns or whatever they would change the name to would be,
sure,
you know, would be allowed to happen. And then it would be a question of, you know, for 20 years, couldn't Cleveland manage to convince the NFL to give them an expansion franchise? That would be, you know, and I mean, I didn't even think about the corollary of what would happen to us, Jake, in that scenario.
Oh, this is very true. We'd have to alter a lot of things here. You know, what's interesting is there's not recent examples of, there are not very many where a city keeps this, because like Baltimore didn't keep the Colts. They took that with them, right?
Yes.
The Texans, sorry, excuse me, the Oilers didn't keep that name. It went to Tennessee originally. If you remember, they were for a year the Tennessee Oilers, and then they rebranded.
Yes.
So it's not like they, when they refilled the Houston franchise, they refilled it with, hey, we're the Houston Oilers again, which I wish, because I hate the Texans, everything about the way that organization looks. They obviously took that went with the organization. They made the decision to change to the Tennessee Titans. I guess alliteration purposes rang true. I don't know. I'm not a historian. Maybe there's a football historian who can chime in with why they, other than just maybe wanting to rebrand, why they changed the name, because there's no connection maybe to Tennessee and oil and all of that, that would make some sense. But we lost one of the great uniform combinations of all time in that process. But it's unique to Cleveland that the city was able to retain the nickname of the organization. That is pretty wild when you think about it. So, but if there's someone else out there who knows more about this, you know, about cities, specific cities, keeping the team name in how, like that is, I feel like it's pretty rare, you know, because obviously the Rams traveled and traveled back. The Raiders went to LA, then they went to Oakland. Now they went to Las Vegas and they keep their name. So it's pretty unique sort of thing there.
Right.
Yeah, we didn't even mention feel like it.
Yeah. The Chargers moved from San Diego to LA and nobody even talks about that. It's so funny that I was three teams off and I'm probably still forgetting two or something. My goodness.
I think that's it. I hope. Well, the Jacksonville, we'll see. The next test will be whether they'll be the London Jaguars.
Right.
Will they take that with them?
The Jaguars. Seems to me more.
The Jaguars. All right. Yeah. Anyway.
All right.
Moving off of our terrible British jokes. What's up, Jack? We miss you. we're going to move to defense now on the side of this umbrella study. I hope you guys are enjoying it. I think it's interesting. Just a reminder of what happened on offense, how we graded these things out. Just like a little synopsis before the next episode hits, is we said on offense, the Browns were high pretty much everywhere. High priority, not high in their influence, but high in their priority of positions. The only one we had a discussion on was wide receiver. If you want to know why, go back and listen. Ravens, we said that they were high everywhere except two places. They were medium prioritization of running back and offensive line. Steelers, medium prioritization of wide receiver, despite the results, which have been good, and low prioritization of the offensive line. Now, that might change. We have a hint that it could change because of Broderick Jones, their first-round pick, but for now, it's a low prioritization position group. The Bengals, the only spot that we said that they haven't invested in, because they have, as much as the jokes have hit about protecting Joe Burrow, they have invested, prioritized, and invested. We're not looking at results here, guys. We're looking at how much cap dollars, draft picks, free agency prioritization have they used on this position. And the only one we noticed that they have not focused on for any sort of importance is tight end. Otherwise, they were high on the offensive line, where they've invested quite a bit lately. Wide receiver, obviously, and they spent a first overall pick on Joe Burrow. So that's the offense. Let's switch to defense, Andrew, where it starts with defensive line. Okay, so we could say this is interesting, because if you're grouping the entire defensive line, it gets a little tricky, because I think we could say here the Browns, as far as edge players go, they've extended Miles. Duh. They have signed Clowney to two decent contracts, $20 million plus over 2 years. They have drafted Alex Wright in the third round. They have drafted Isaiah McGuire in the fourth round. You know, they have, we can actually break this up. I don't know why. I think I looked at the cap thing that we were looking through and I didn't see that they did them by position, specific position. So we can start at edge. They are spending $38 million at edge this year, which is 15.4% of their cap. But again, we're looking back at a 3 year sample size. So I think that they have highly prioritized it. I think between Miles and Clowney, those are two pretty big commitments. The drafting of Wright, if you include now this year, the trading for Za'Darius Smith, although a friendly deal, but they're paying him decently. They went out and signed Agua Okoronkwo. They drafted Isaiah McGuire. They drafted seventh round pick last year, Isaiah Thomas. I think that's fair to say that they have highly prioritized edge. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. I think that this is one, this is sort of the opposite of what the Steelers have done at wide receiver. The Browns have put a lot of resources towards this, and because a lot of those resources have been on 1 year deal, the two 1 year deals for Jadeveon Clowney, you know, and now the Za'Darius Smith trade, you know, they've been looking for solutions on a year by year basis. And they, in the meantime, have also been drafting players, hoping that, you know, they kind of develop into longer term solutions. And, you know, so far, you know, they've kind of been caught in between. Now we'll see what happens in 2023. I think this is the strongest group they've put together since Andrew Berry got here, without a doubt. But, you know, they really need to see two things this year. They need to see Za'Darius Smith kind of continue his level of production, you know, and then they also need to see either Okoronkwo show that he can be more of a three-down player, or, and ideally both, and then also Alex Wright or Isaiah McGuire, or again, ideally both, turning into players that can at least play in the rotation, right? I mean, Alex Wright played last year, but he played at a very low level, a poor level. You know, I mean, he's a rookie from UAB, so I think our expectations were pretty low. And even by those standards, I don't know that he really did much that we could be excited about. So I think they have spent some resources on it. I think we mentioned on the offensive side, if they had a first round pick, they probably would have tried to address wide receiver the past 2 years. I think the other position, if they had a first round pick last year and this year, it's, I mean, and ignoring the quarterback problem, it's wide receiver and edge were probably the two. Those are the areas that need a first round pick right now on this roster.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Looking at the Bengals, Sam Hubbard, they drafted in the third round. Joseph Asai, they have drafted in the third round. They've extended Hubbard. They gave a nice big free agency contract to Trey Hendrickson. That has worked out really well. And they have drafted Miles Murphy in the first round this past year. drafted fourth rounder Cam Sample there, all the way in on edge in Cincinnati.
Yeah, for sure.
We don't need to go too deep into that one. And obviously these defenses are a little different, you know, based on alignment stuff. So like the Ravens edge guys, Odafe Owe, who they took in the first round of 21, Tyus Bowser, I think, is a little bit of more of like, is like a rush player for them.
For sure.
So he's been extended because he was a 2017 second round pick. They took fourth rounder Tavius Robinson. This past year, they've selected second rounder David Ayabo. I forget if it's a job. I think it's a soft J. Ayabo. David Ayabo. Anyway. Yeah, they've invested a first, a second, and an extension. They are all the way in on edge pressure. Yep.
They're not paying much. You know, $14 million against the cap this year because, you know, most of their players are either cheap or rookies, you know, on their rookie deals.
Yeah. The Bengals are forking out 37, so they're right there with the Browns, but a higher percentage of their cap, 16.7 for those guys. Okay. All right. So Baltimore also all in. Pittsburgh clearly is also all in. TJ Watt, who they selected the all-inest. Alex Highsmith, they took in the third round, and it has worked out for them.
Yep.
They took Quincy Roche in the sixth round of 21. Then they took Nick Herbig this year in the fourth round of this draft. And I don't know if there's any others. No, I mean, they got a really fortunate break. They lost Bud Dupree to free agency, and Alex Highsmith came in and has turned into a really good player for them. I don't think they've invested quite as much as some others, but they have invested enough to be all in at that position. So high priority for everybody at defensive end. Now, real quick, I should not skip over these two things. Pittsburgh's commitment to the position room at edge is, that can't be listed, right?
I know.
They have these grouped strange. They have Cam Hayward and Larry Ogunjobi as edge players. So we're not going to, again, these 3-4-4-3 dynamics can get a little weird. So.
Yeah. Oh, I see. They've got Hayward and Ogunjobi and Montrevious Adams. None of those guys are edge players. What are we doing here?
Yeah. Yeah. They got them linked up. It's like these 3-4 guys who are four eyes or
right.
Like sort of B gap centric players. Okay. They list them as edges. So semantics. Anyway, we've covered all those. I think it's a pretty high priority. Yeah. Now, defensive tackle, I think that even this year, the Browns, I guess we're looking at. It's tough, dude. It's really hard because I think they have shifted, but does that deserve to go from low to medium? I guess you could take it to medium now because they signed Dalvin to a big contract and they have drafted third rounders and fourth rounders.
Yeah.
They've drafted Ethan, who's a third rounder. They've drafted Elliott, who's a third rounder. Tommy's a fourth rounder. Perrion Winfrey's a fourth rounder. And they went out and signed Maurice Hurst and Tristan Hill. I think
Taven
we got
Bryan last year.
Taven Bryan, they've done some things. It's shifted from low to medium, it's at the borderline bottom of medium to me.
I agree. I think
crazy to talk about there, but go ahead.
No, I just think that the issue here is that they haven't hit on any of these draft picks. All right, you listed them all off. You're absolutely right to do that, and they also took a few flyers on guys. You know, Malik McDowell a few years ago, character concerns, not in the league. Different flyers, but Maurice Hurst and Tristan Hill, as you mentioned, also those are flyers. So they want to be low, obviously, right? I don't think they wanted to hand out the Dalvin Tomlinson contract, but I think Jim Schwartz probably just said like, guys, seriously.
Yeah, we can't do this.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. So 14.2, 5% of the cap. That tells us it's a low investment. Now Dalvin's cap number is a little finicky.
Yeah,
one's tricky. Yeah, but even if it jumps it up to 8, 9, 10, it's still a very low number for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see the argument for low. I think we're putting them as sort of like the low medium number there. Looking around, Cincinnati has picked – they've actually been a little bit more frugal about this. So they signed DJ Reader, but they didn't break the bank, but he's a great player. They traded for BJ Hill – who is, I think they traded Billy Price for him to New York, if I recall, the center from Iowa State.
Good pull, yeah.
And then Zach Carter, they took in the third round last year. He was not very good. But that's kind of it. I don't think we can call them prioritizing defensive tackle. I feel like that's a medium for me.
Yeah,
they haven't really drafted anybody, and they've signed DJ Reader, but Yeah. It feels like that's one of their positions where the process has not been hugely committed, but they've gotten still some nice results.
Right. I mean, I think we're going to say that about them, other than Edge, I think we're going to say that about them throughout the defense, right? That they have had a real knack for identifying, you know, value free agent signings across the defense.
Yeah. So DJ Reader has a 15.5 million cap hit this year, and BJ Hill has a 10 million cap hit this year, both of which are plumpy, but the Browns are going to have that sort of Reader type number come up with Tomlinson at some point.
Yep.
So I would say a solid medium. You could point them in the direction of high, but as opposed to low, but they're probably right there in the middle. Baltimore. Let's see here. Baltimore has done the following. Michael Pierce came in. He's been extended. He's been brought back. He's been around. Travis Jones, the UConn kid they took in the third round. Broderick Washington of 22. Sorry. Broderick Washington, fifth round in 2020. Let me see here. That's kind of it. They have, I would say they're on the low end now. I mean, they had pieced it together and fared really well because of he left this year. We were very interested
Campbell,
in
Calais
his service.
Campbell.
Calais Campbell,
yep,
had been a big part of things. Now Brent Urban, I should I've talked too soon again. These 3-4-4-3 discrepancies.
Yep.
Also, Justin Matabuka is a third round pick, who's a really good player,
yep,
for them, and Brent Urban, who they, yep, signed,
yep,
a couple times. I'd still say that's a medium. I don't think they've highly prioritized it. They haven't drafted anybody big time in there, and they haven't extended. I mean, they brought Pierce in a couple times, but like, if your best players in there are a fifth, a third, and a third. So it feels medium.
Yeah. And I mean, really, if you look at the resources they've spent less than the Browns. They've got more production, but they spent less than the Browns.
This is true. So defensive tackle for them, it looks like it's labeled correctly on this. The Steelers defense must really confuse.
Yeah.
Over the cap or Spirac or whatever here.
Yeah.
10 million is what they have, only 4.8% of their cap. So they're very cheap in there.
Mm-hmm.
Matabuke and Michael Pierce make 3.2 and 3.01 against the cap this year. So Pittsburgh's different. They're tricky. Cam Hayward has been extended. They have prioritized Cam Hayward. Put it that way. He has always been the guy that they have taken care of. He was drafted way back in the first round of 2011 and is still doing dominant things.
Mm.
So he's going to make $22 million this year. So that puts them toward the high prioritization line. They've paid Larry Ogunjobi well a couple times.
Yep.
In free agency. They have drafted DeMarvin Leal in the third round. They just drafted Keanu Benton in the second round. Feels like with a second rounder, multiple extensions, and another free agent in the mid to high price range at the position, that's a high value for them. Would you agree?
I would agree. Yeah, I would. Okay. And, you know, I just – going back to the Ravens for just a second, Justin Matabike is a name that, I mean, I assume they extend him at some point soon, but I don't think they have yet. And that's a player that would really fit well next to Dalvin Tomlinson if that opportunity presented itself next offseason.
If they let him go, they're kind of hurting. I would be surprised, but you never know with these range, especially now when Lamar's contract's going to kick in and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so
just some idle speculation there, but yeah, the Steelers, it's, I mean, it's really been the lifeblood of their team. You go back to Casey Hampton, right? And I'm sure I'm forgetting other names. They've always had a strong defensive interior. It's obviously something that they prioritize, and you know, there's a culture around it too, right? That they can bring in guys that haven't done it at a high level. And I mean, Montrevious Adams is a name who, you know, kind of bounced around the league and then gets to Pittsburgh, and he at least fits the system and he does what he's supposed to.
Yeah, even Isaiah Loudermilk, kid who they took in the fifth round of 21.
Exactly.
Another one out of Wisconsin. It's been decent for them. So they're the only team with edge and defensive tackle high prioritization. Everybody else on the D-tackle side was medium. Now linebacker, which it should be interesting. Let me see here. So the Browns only have 10.1 for just a barely over 4% of their cap committed to linebacker. JOK in the second round, cheap contract to Anthony Walker, cheap contract to bring back Sione Takitaki. They did take Jacob Phillips in the third round, Tony Fields in the fifth round. That's it. I feel like it's medium because linebacker is so... the just the general value, like taking a second and a third round linebacker and signing some guys, it might be low, but it's like low to medium for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you think it's low? We can compare the division because the rest of the division will kind of tell the story, but it feels medium.
I agree with you. It's right on that verge. I'm just off the top of my head thinking about what the Steelers have done at the position and what the Ravens have done trading for Roquan Smith and drafting Patrick Queen in the first. I'm tempted to say it's low kind of by comparison.
Okay. That we'll come back. We'll revisit. So Cincinnati has done well, but they've actually invested less. This is an example of process and results, right?
Yep.
So Cincinnati has drafted Jermaine Pratt and Logan Wilson in the third round of two straight drafts and extended both of them. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to extend Logan Wilson. I actually don't know if they've extended Logan Wilson yet, but they brought back Jermaine Pratt.
Yeah.
So they took both those guys in the third. Akeem Davis Gaither out of App State, they took in the fourth round of 2020. They took a seventh rounder, Marcus Bailey. They're probably medium, right? Yep. They've just had nice fortune on these guys they took in the third round. They've drafted well there. So they're above the Browns. I don't know if you can even say that, actually. I feel like they just have drafted better.
Well,
they're
probably
around the same line, right? But they did extend Pratt.
That's the thing. It's extending Pratt. It's paying Pratt. Yeah. You know, if the Browns extend JOK, if JOK has another good year and they extend him, then they're for sure a medium.
Got it. Okay, so low for Browns. Bengals are in the medium department. I mean, Baltimore, we don't even need to debate. It's heavy, heavy investment. First rounder in Queen, third rounder in Malik Harrison. If you forgot that, they just took Trenton Simpson in the third round.
Great point.
And traded a first for Roquan Smith. So like they're above and beyond everybody on this one by a wide margin of how much they prioritize backer.
Was it a first for Roquan or was it like two twos or something?
I thought it was something. Maybe it was only a second. Maybe I could be wrong about that because Pittsburgh then also did the Claypool for a second thing. So like there was a whole bunch of weird stuff.
I think that's what
on.
It was, is that the Bears traded their second to the Raven, or no, other way around. They could trade their second to the Steelers because they had the Ravens second, I believe is what happened.
Trying to look it up. So they are on Tuesday sending the Bears a second and a fifth. So still it's pretty high. Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
They extended him right then and there too.
And that's the big issue is that they extended him and on top of having drafted Queen in the first round, it's so much resources at the position. So many resources. Yeah.
$17 million, 7.64% of their cap, but the Bengals goes to linebacker. For Baltimore, linebacker gets, again, I don't want it to be weird where they have guys that aren't actually, see, it's a little tricky because they have like Tyus Bowser as a linebacker. It's high. $9 million to Roquan, $4 million to Patrick Queen, another $1.5 million to Malik Harrison, and then $1 million to Trenton Simpson, the third rounder this year. So you're looking at a pretty heavy commitment on their side, just largely because of draft capital at this point. But Patrick Queen did get Roquan got top linebacker money, I'm pretty sure. So that tells
that's
a story
right.
in and of itself.
That's right.
Okay, last is Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh's a little tricky because in 2020, right, or was it 19, but I think it was 20 where they drafted
it was 19, Devin Bush. Devin Bush, yeah.
They traded up for him.
They sure did.
In the first 10, round. But if we're looking for the last 3 years, we probably have to eliminate that and say, what have they done lately? Well, they didn't extend him. They brought in Miles Jack for a season. So they're on the low end of this. And now you look at their linebacker room, their inside linebackers, and you're like, okay. I mean, they have Cole Holcomb from Washington, who's a decent football player. Landon Roberts is a physical linebacker. Right. But this is by far the weakest group in the division. I mean, they don't have anybody else. Mm-hmm. Like Mark Robinson, they drafted in the seventh round of last year's draft. They brought in Tanner Muse from Seattle. But, like, that's a weak point of their defense. As much as they build up front is kind of what they are – skimping on, and probably Devin Bush just changed like they're in complete rewind of what we need to dump into that position. So I would say they're very low. While so if we're saying the Browns are low, the Bengals are medium, the Ravens are high, Pittsburgh joins the Browns at the low, but I think they're below the Browns in terms of
I agree with you. Position. I agree with you. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Look at corner now. So corner, I should say Pittsburgh's commitment to linebackers got to be cheap. I wonder how they have them listed. So they've
got
commit,
Watt in there again somehow.
Yeah. They only commit 2.7 to Holcomb, 2.3 to Landon Roberts, and 1.1 to Tanner Muse. It's a very low number.
Yeah.
So, okay, corner, the Browns are high. I mean, we can't say anything else. Very simple. They've committed a ton of resources. Denzel, when they drafted him in the first, extended him. Drafted Greg Newsome in the first, probably looking at extending him. Drafted Martin Emerson first of their entire picks in 22 in the third round. They brought back A.J. Green. I don't think I'm missing anything else. So they brought back Thomas Gray. Yeah, they've invested heavily. They have $22 million tied into the position group, 8.8% of the cap. Anything to add?
Nope, you covered it.
Okay, so Cincinnati now, Cam Taylor-Britt they took in the second. D.J. Turner they took in the second this year. They have signed Chidobe Awuzie to a nice contract. Free agency, they brought in a flyer on Sidney Jones. They brought in Mike Hilton again. I think they're pretty high on the spectrum here. They haven't committed a first, but they've committed quite a bit of resources to it still.
Yep, agreed.
Okay. All right, Baltimore now. So we have this is where they've gone in reverse. They did extend Marlon Humphrey, who's very good.
Yeah. Yep.
But they let go Marcus Peters, and they didn't really replace him with any sort of significant talent. Rockison from Las Vegas, the Raiders, he comes over. But then it's like fourth-rounder Jalen Armour Davis, Kyle Blue Kelly they drafted in the fifth round this year. Their nickel is Brandon Stevens they took in the third round last year. In 2021, they took a fourth-rounder Damarian Williams. I guess you could say they're close to high. They're medium-high, right? I mean –
Yep.
They gave Yusin decent money, like low-end decent money. They gave Marlon Humphrey a pretty big extension. Then they took, like we said here, let me reread. So they took a fourth, a third, a fourth, and a fourth. So medium feels.
High end to medium. I agree.
Okay, so also their commitment financially, they're giving Humphrey a 19.9 number this year. So they're $29 million committed to the corner room there, 13.3% of their cap. All right. So we have Cleveland high since everybody's prioritizing corner. Now we get to Pittsburgh. Even though they took Joey Porter Jr., who I like a ton, in the second round this year,
sure.
Levi Wallace, they Buffalo, they drafted Corey Trice in the seventh round. They brought in Patrick Peterson to a one-year, like $8 million deal. They have Chandon Sullivan, Duke Dawson. Chris Wilcox. Mm-hmm. That is low prioritization for them. So low at linebacker and corner for them right now.
Agreed.
Which is interesting.
Agreed. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're trying to piece it together. Right. But obviously if Joey Porter Jr., becomes a player for them, it changes the look of this a little bit, but not really for this exercise, just in terms of the look of the room. But it's really interesting to me the way that they've allocated the resources on their defense. They're giving so much money to Cam Hayward and TJ Watt that they and then Fitzpatrick that they, the three stars approach on defense is not something you see that often in the league, right?
Correct.
The Bengals, it's a group of guys all getting paid, $4 to $6 million. The Steelers, it's, three really high price contracts, extensions that they've handed out that it kind of makes the rest of their defense really hard to navigate.
It is an interesting position they're in. So they've spent $17 million at corner, 7.6% of their cap. Levi Wallace at 5.5, Patrick Peterson at 4.25, and then some $1 million others. It's kind of there. So.
It's so crazy, too, when we're looking at these – it's cap spending by position on SpotTrack, and the Rams are at the bottom at every defensive position other than defensive tackle. It's just going to be such an interesting season in LA when they're literally going to play a no-name defense. Aaron Donald and 10 guys you've never heard of.
It is going to be – I feel like it could drive Aaron Donald to retirement. So Cincinnati is the only team – sorry, Pittsburgh's the only team with sort of a weird philosophy that's differing from everybody else with their corner and linebacker situation. Most others are medium or high. Now, safety is tricky. The Browns are pretty committed to it. They've spent a significant amount of resources there over time. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at the last 3 years, Delpit, second rounder, Thornhill, free agent, decent money. They obviously signed John Johnson to top of the the market money. They brought in Rodney McLeod, and then, like I said, they've total spent is $22 million, largely because of John Johnson's current money that will go away here in a bit, but that's still pretty good investment at the position. I feel like they're in the high priority of safety now with how they've gone about it with McLeod and Thornhill this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, the John Johnson money coming, a lot of it coming off of the cap here in a few days, you know, even though that changes the cap, it doesn't really change what we know about how they've approached the position. You know, I mean, I think, you know, cutting Johnson to go out and sign Thornhill, it's not like they were, you know, trying to, you know, improve necessarily as much as they swung and missed on a player and then tried to replace him.
Yeah. Yep. I'm with you. So they let Bates go. Obviously that tells you, I mean, they can't extend everybody, but that does tell you, you have to prioritize certain things, right? So they let Bates go. They let Von Bell go as well. They brought in Nick Scott from the Rams on a cheaper deal. They did draft Jordan Battle with a third round pick this year. And Dax Hill's a first round pick. I still feel like they're highly prioritizing it, even though they let guys walk. I mean, taking a third and a first and signing somebody is not nothing, right? So like they're committing $10 million, essentially 9.34% of their cap. Still feel like they're prioritizing it. Do you? Is that high to you or medium?
No, I think it's high. I think, you know, it's one of the areas where they've been more aggressive in terms of replacing these players through the draft, as compared to other areas of their defense. So certainly I think within the context of how they've approached building their defensive roster, they're on the high end.
Okay, fair. Looking at Baltimore, Kyle Hamilton's a first round pick, big contract to Marcus Williams. They drafted Geno Stone in the seventh round of 2020. They don't have a ton of depth behind it, but when you sign a big contract to Marcus Williams from the Saints at the time and you draft Kyle Hamilton in the first round, that's a high prioritization to me. 3.7 to Kyle Hamilton and 7.3, so $15 million total to the position.
Yeah, definitely high. Definitely.
Yep. Pittsburgh's a little tricky because they let longtime safety Terrell Edmunds go. They didn't give him another contract. They denied his, he was a first round pick, which was a surprise way back when that happened. And then they didn't pick up his fifth year option, which would have been close to $7 million, but they did bring him back for the fifth year on a $2.5 million deal. But this year he's gone, but they brought in Keanu Neal on a low end deal, not very much committed to him, I don't think. Let me make sure I have the exact amount. They brought Keanu Neal in for 1.5, and they brought in DeMonte Casey to bring in as many former Falcons as possible. So they brought in 2.1. They have Miles Killebrew, who they spent 2.4 on, was with Detroit last. And then they obviously traded a lot of capital to Miami for Minka Fitzpatrick, and they have extended him at $8 million. So I feel like they're also a high prioritization at safety. I feel like that has to be what they're labeled as, right? Because they're $15 million committed to it, almost 7% of their cap.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's high, and I think that I'm pulling up the Fitzpatrick numbers here, and you know, his cap hit is decent the next or these first 2 years, but then it's over 20 the next three. Yeah. You know, unless they decided to move on, so. Having a safety with a $20 million cap hit for a year or two is definitely a high priority.
It is a high priority. And it looks like they're going to be the outlier of defense because most teams have strong corner commitments. The Steelers don't. The safeties are pretty universally high across the board. Linebacker, the Steelers are the team that has the lowest commitment to linebackers, although the Browns and Bengals are sort of that low medium range, while the Ravens are the outlier there where they're heavy commitment to linebacker. All teams committed to edge players, obviously a priority position. And then defensive tackle is where Pittsburgh is the outlier with a very high prioritization there, where it feels like others are sort of committing fringe commitments to that. So that sums it up. I don't think the Browns are not as different as you think from some teams. They're really sort of similar in a lot of ways.
Yep.
To these teams. And obviously we're talking about some of their commitments. I mean, they didn't have many low. I mean, the only one that we said that they were low on would be linebacker.
Right.
And I can even see where you could say, well, how low are they? Because they did commit a second and third round picks to those over the last 3 years. So
absolutely.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. Now, special teams really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Boswell, they're committed to him. They drafted, Pittsburgh is, they drafted him. I don't know if they drafted him. I think he might be UDFA, but they've extended him. That's a lot, right? They drafted a punter. So they have high prioritization to specials. They've drafted a punter and they've extended a kicker multiple times. That's high commitment. The Browns, Bjorquez doesn't mean much to me. They've shuffled punters, but they have committed a fourth rounder to a kicker. So it feels like they're pretty committed to one half of that. So that probably puts them at a medium.
Yeah.
The Bengals I think
they're paying Charlie Hewlett too as a, you know, I don't have his contract.
That's true. Top
of me,
end of snapper. Yeah. Top end of that money too. Yeah. So medium high.
Yeah.
Like I like. Evan McPherson's a fifth round pick for the Bengals and they just drafted a punter in the sixth. So pretty committed to special teams there. The Ravens have, you know, what are you going to do with Justin Tucker? You're just going to keep paying it. They also just drafted in 22 a punter in the fourth round. So they're committed. Right. So actually pretty high prioritization on specials from every team. The only team where I'm like, the punter is whatever is the Browns with Bjorquez, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
And to that point, I would just say that, you know, we saw today Brandon McManus got cut by the Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's like, I mean, I understand why the Browns felt they needed to make a move at kicker, you know, from where they were. But this is why you don't draft a kicker, because a guy like Brandon McManus, who is an absolute, you know, I mean, one of the better kickers in the league and exactly what the Browns would need is available. You know, the Browns can't touch him because they've tied themselves to Cade York. I mean, if they were still playing kicker roulette, you know, they could dump whoever they're with and, you know, they could pull a Mike Prefer with Brandon McManus, right? Where they go, oh, Bubba Ventrone's available. Okay, well, thanks, Mike, for all your hard work, and we'll see you soon. Yeah. So,
they're tied to Cade one more year at minimum here.
Yeah, sure. I think at least one more full year, no matter what happens, and especially since they changed the special teams coach. So it's a little frustrating because McManus is like the silver bullet that solves all your kicker woes, and you know he's just available for free out there. But whatever, that's spilt milk for sure.
I don't know how did he do last year. I didn't look up his statistics. To put him on the market is interesting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brandon McManus stats. Let's see if he had a decent year. So he last year went 28 of 36. So that's actually on the lower end of the spectrum. He went 8 of 13 from deep. His issues were longer kicks, although he missed two in the 30 to 39 range, which doesn't help. But he's been, you know, he's been an 80% kicker his whole career. So
we'll go ahead 32. And just pilot a new segment here where Jake fact checks Andrew. And anytime I say something confidently, you know, you can just kind of jump in and be like,
I mean, it could have been an outlier.
Rams moved from St. Louis to Los Angeles, and actually, Brandon McManus in the worst year of his career last year. It's good. It's good content.
He's
a lot of Schadenfreude out there for those of you that don't like me on this podcast.
Stop it. He's due to come back to 85% somewhere. He's also kicking in Denver, which does help a little bit, but
no, it does. It does. There's a little bit of a bonus for kicking out there, especially with the long ones. No, I just think it's interesting, you know, that when we're talking about the way this is built, it's like, you know, and obviously it's so hard to predict year to year. So other than Justin Tucker, It feels like you shouldn't invest that much, but as you said, all of these teams do seem to prioritize it.
Yeah, it would be, to me, it would be a discussion right now if they were shuffling through kickers the way they were before, but they're too committed to it, to the bit right now with York. But he cannot repeat the shanks of last year. So what I wanted to show with this exercise was that the Browns are building their, it's again, the results might be different in some spots, but the process is pretty similar. These organizations around, you know, around the division who are really successful. So I don't know if there's anything learned from this or not, Andrew, but I feel like there's at least you can lean into the fact that, like, well, you know, how are the Ravens and the, you know, the Steelers getting all these results? The Bengals, the process isn't different. It's the pieces around the process, right? How they're developing, how they're formulating. And I think that might be a large part of what the Browns are trying to do with the development of culture and the way they're approaching this offseason. You know,
absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely. Yep. And it's, you know, it's definitely a conversation we've had a few times, but the biggest gap in the division is between, you know, the way that John Harbaugh runs the Ravens, the way that Mike Tomlin runs the Steelers, and the Browns' continual struggle to get that sort of culture to stick in Cleveland. And you know, I think they're really putting it into overdrive this year, because they have too much talent on the team to let those sorts of infighting type issues bring them down, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Well, hopefully you guys took something out of this the way we did. It's actually fun to go through and look at and think about how other teams are building these things and whether the Browns are on par with that or if they're just going about it in a completely different manner. The thing I can tell you is this was really enlightening to how much money they're spending, how much money, how much draft capital, and all of the ways they've been creative with trades to be this highly prioritizing every single position that we mentioned. Now, there were a couple that they weren't, D tackle, linebacker, right? And we even argued a little bit about wide receiver. It's fair to me to say Jimmy's spending money. They're finding ways to erase some of the mistakes that they've made, but Jimmy's willing to spend, and they're being creative to solve issues at positions to put them into the tier of highly invested where maybe they shouldn't be, where you look at a team like Pittsburgh and you're like, they're focusing efforts here and here. Well, the fringe is a little tighter in terms of money spent. The difference between cap and actual money out the door. That's where Jack Duffin has illuminated that so well for us. The Browns' advantage from Haslam on money spent versus cap structure. So enlightening stuff. We did the offense. If you missed that one, go check it out. We did the defense now. I had a lot of fun. Andrew, appreciate you, man, very much.
Always a pleasure, Jake. Thanks for having me on. And, you know, next time we'll do another one for just the special teams, right?
Yeah, well, we could, right? You know, we could just really spend 40 minutes an hour on Brandon McManus if you want. You know, we'd spend an hour there. No, he'll be back. Andrew, that's right. Andrew will be back next week. He's got some traveling to do. We'll catch up with him. Like I said, check in tomorrow on the mailbag edition. We'll do that weekend mailbag. Get those questions submitted. I've told you how to send them over Twitter, direct message on the OBR, or through jake@theobr.com. Send them through email. I appreciate you guys being here, hanging out. Thanks to Andrew for taking time to do this, especially doing two recordings in one day, which is tricky. So I appreciate you guys also being here, stopping by. Rate and review the pod. It would mean a ton to me. And give us feedback whenever you can. Always great. Thanks, guys. Have a great Friday. Go Browns.